Cecilia had never thought about how long it could take to move a few people across a short stretch of ocean. She had always been, she realized, the one who didn't have to wait. This time she waited, and heard from both Militia and the young people what had happened. Even with her wits restored by hot broth and half a survival bar from Bubbles' pack, it didn't make sense to her.
Lepescu killed the other hunters? Why?
My guess would be that he thought he could get away alone. No witnesses on his side, convicted criminals, if any survived, on the other. If he'd killed the young people, gotten into that flitter and made it away...
But he couldn't possibly...
I'm not sure. Suppose we had still been on the mainland when George's transmission went out. He'd have had hours, not minutes, to complete his plans. Kill the witnesses, gas the remaining victims from the flitter. Fly back to Bandon, take the shuttle up. A wild gamble, but he liked wild gambles. Better than surrendering tamely to be tried himself.
But why not get the others to help him?
Likely they wouldn't. That Mr. Smith... And by the way, are you and the others going to tell me who Mr. Smith is?
Someone who shouldn't be here. Later, perhaps.
Cecilia glanced around at the militia who might be within earshot.
Ah, like someone's son, perhaps. Yes. Anyway, Mr. Smith explained that there had been a lot of confusion after the flitter crashed here, and the Admiral had insisted on continuing the hunt. He might well fear that his allies would turn on him. If he had gotten away, well away, we would have found an island full of dead people and no witnesses to convict him. He wouldn't necessarily know that I was here at all, or that I knew he was on planet. A bold plan, typical of him, but as usual, wasteful of resources.
And Rafa told me about what happened after they crashed, although she doesn't know all of Ronnie's story, or George's, or the others. Were they all your crew?
Apparently not. This wasn't the first such hunt, and Petra said some who survived a few weeks of a hunt were kept to seed the next, to keep it interesting. Too many were, though. I never thought... I swear I never imagined any such thing.
Of course not.
Cecilia smiled at the younger woman. So much older than the younglings, Ronnie and his friends, but still so vulnerable. She clearly needed someone to reassure her. Yet, in Cecilia's experience, no reassurance made up for bad results. And this had to be a bad result, no matter how selfless the original decision. She looked away from Harris and thought about what she could do.
Do I know anyone in the Admiralty?
By the time Harris and Cecilia landed on Bandon again, the young people, except for Buttons, who remained the family's representative on Bandon, had been taken to the mainland, along with two wounded militia and three wounded victims. Ronnie needed medical observation. The girls had wanted to check on George themselves, and Bubbles had an appointment with her father. Cecilia relaxed in the luxury of Bandon Lodge. A full set of servants had been flown out as soon as the island was secured, and left Harris to her own devices. Harris, after a bath and change of clothes, gathered her courage and went to see if her former crew would even speak to her. They were scattered through the guest rooms, according to the information in the desk comp. She found door after door with its privacy locks engaged, and didn't try to intrude. Finally, she found one door ajar. Petrus looked out at her.
Ah, Captain Serrano, I was just about to bathe.
I'm sorry, I'll...
Wait, she would have said, but she had no right to force him to speak to her if he didn't want to.
I'm sorry I yelled at you back there. It was just hard to believe.
I'm sorry I thought you could have been with Lepescu.
Look, I'm still stinking filthy. I was checking on Oblo, and he's fine. Let me get clean, and why don't we go walk somewhere?
At least he was willing to talk to her. Harris nodded, silently, and turned away. Back in her room, she tried to relax, but her eyes kept moving to the window, with its striking view of the beach and the other island across the water. The sun slid lower. The colors of sea and sky changed minute by minute. Flitters came and went. They were, she supposed, picking up the bodies and taking them away, bringing more investigators to look for more clues. Her head ached. She fell into a restless doze in her chair. Bathed and dressed in clean clothes, Petrus looked more like the man she remembered, and less. He was not in uniform, the only clothes she'd seen him wear except for the rags of the island. He was not in the mental uniform that had kept them both from acknowledging what they could feel if they allowed it. His eyes challenged her.
If you need a rest, we could hold this until morning.
A night with issues unsettled would be no rest.
No, I'm ready.
To her surprise, he smiled at her and held up a basket.
My favorite captain. Always ready. I've had my first free meal, but thought we should bring something. There are enough cooks here to feed two cruisers. And the young lord, what's his name?
Buttons. They call him Buttons.
The staff doesn't. Anyway, he gave me a map and suggested something called the Seabreeze Trail.
After what had happened, she had no right to quibble.
How is everyone?
Most of them are asleep, I think. Oblo said to tell you thumbs up on coming to the rescue, and I said I would. He said there's a nurse in the clinic there on the mainland that almost makes the whole thing worthwhile. Remember the time we had to get him out of that rat hole in Secus?
Oh, yes. Purple dyed skin and all.
Petrus led the way down the carpeted hall, hung with soft-toned pictures of flowers and birds.
The young man said we could take a flitter or walk. Which would you rather?
It was nearly dark, though why that should matter, she couldn't think.
Let's walk, if it's not too far.
Nope, just down this way.
In the gathering dusk, he led the way to a trail edged with white stones. It wound around one wing of the lodge, skirted a clump of very tall trees, then dipped to the shore. Far off, the sun hung in a glowing net of haze. The sea held the light and threw it back at them. The island across the strait showed a pale edge of beach and a dark hump, but no details. They walked on along the beach to an outcrop of gray rock very like the rock on the other island. It lay across the end of the beach, and beyond it, Harris could see a rougher, stony shore where the sea nibbled and sucked hungrily. Here they stopped, as if the rock were a real barrier, although its blunt steps could have been climbed by a child. Petrus set down his basket.
While we still have the light, we should see what the cooks came up with. Ah, real food.
He spread the serving containers out. Harris sat down abruptly. It couldn't be this easy. Something had to happen, some further punishment for her mistake. It would be fair if he had put poison in the food, if he leapt on her and strangled her. She hadn't meant bad to come of it, but it had. And when had intention ever been justification for causing the deaths of innocents?
Captain Harris, you're about as relaxed as a novice gunner before the first battle. What do you think, I'm going to scold you?
You'd have a right.
He looked into her eyes.
Well, yes, in one way I do. In another, I don't. I think you want your scolding, is that it?
I don't know. I want what happened to be different. For it to have worked the way it was supposed to. You safe.
By the gods, Harris, do you think we'd have joined the regs if we'd wanted to be safe? And safe at the cost of the best commander we ever had? Keep us from being butchered by that fool and his stupid tactics, yes, but not ruin yourself and us in the bargain.
You're right. I was wrong.
The rest of the pain she had put off feeling stabbed her. The thought of her crew, from that scrawny new kid in power systems who had burst into tears with the first mail from home, to the wizened old senior medical mate, finishing out her last tour before retirement. What had happened to them? Tears spilled over. She could feel the wind chilling them as they ran down her cheeks. Petrus moved close and put his arm around her, a firm but gentle hold.
You should have trusted us. Did you think we'd fail you?
I had failed you. The scan data were all lost. They told me you'd all be court-martialed along with me. Risk discharge at least, and probably time in prison.
So you resigned. Walked out.
Yes.
It all came back. The nightmare she'd relived so often these past months. The board behind their polished table, the familiar faces as strange as masks, the feel of her dress uniform collar tabs on her throat, a blade no less dangerous for being fabric and not steel.
I was told that if I resigned immediately, they would take no action against you, the crew. They would hush it up. It wouldn't have happened. Sorkang, my father's friend, one I'd counted on to help me argue my case, he said that. And if Sorkang was against me...
She shook her head. She had said this already. It made no difference. She had had her reasons. She had fought herself to make that decision. And none of her reasons mattered. It had been wrong. As wrong as not anticipating any enemy's position and firepower. Petra squeezed her shoulders.
Well, if it helps, not all your crew was as loyal as they should have been. Lepescu had a ringer in, and that's what happened to the scan data.
How'd you find that out?
First transit brig. Friend of a friend of a friend. Couldn't do much for us, but did tell us who did it and on whose orders. We took care of him.
Harris shuddered. She didn't want to understand, although she did.
How many?
I'm not sure. They split us up early on. We were tried in different groups, supposedly determined by our level of responsibility. Some weren't formally charged, I heard, but I couldn't tell you what happened to them. Of those brought to court, the scuttlebutt is that all but three were convicted. Some were discharged, and some had the usual loss of rank or pay, but no brig time. They decided to make an example of about 50 of us, the senior NCOs and officers. And from that, about 30 were brought here. The others are in the prison system somewhere.
We'll have to do something about that.
I don't see how you can now. Maybe if this comes out, their cases can be reevaluated, but whatever Lepescu was up to, the original charges are still there.
I'll think of something. Maybe Lady Cecilia...
Maybe. But I had something else to say to you. I wish it was darker. The thing is, you're not my commander now, right?
Right.
Harris picked up something. It was dark enough she could hardly see the food, and stuffed it in her mouth. Cheese and pastry and something.
You were always professional, you know. But I used to wonder if you felt something. You know, something like I did.
He wasn't looking at her, but at the last fading purple glow in the west. Then up at the stars. Harris had time to remember times she had not wanted to be professional.
Yes. Something.
So?
The flat gray light, all that was left of sunset, caught in his eyes. Harris opened her mouth to say how impossible it was, then realized it wasn't. Not anymore.
So...
She still could not say it. She moved instead into the arc of his arm.
You should have trusted me. It hurt when you went away like that, without a word.
Yes. It did.
She leaned against him. His arm felt good against her back. Better than good.
It hurt a lot. But I'm here now, and I'm trusting you.
About time.
Then his grip tightened. She had never allowed herself to imagine, really imagine, what embracing him would be like. It would have been too difficult to go through everyday shipboard life if she had. Now she was glad of her former discipline. She had no nagging comparisons to make, just the experience to savor. Cecilia looked smug. Bright morning light gilded her hair, and she looked crisp and refreshed by ample sleep and good food.
I fixed it.
Fixed what?
Harris had bathed and changed when she and Petrus got back to the lodge shortly before dawn, but inside her clothes, her body felt lush and relaxed. She wondered if Cecilia could tell. She had her own list of things for Cecilia to fix, and hoped her employer hadn't used up her energy on something minor.
Your resignation. I hate to lose you, but I know how you've grieved, and the evidence is clear. So I just argued my way along, and they've agreed to take you back. Quite willingly, in fact. Everyone knows that George's father will sue Lepescu and his cronies, and the regular space service is anxious to dissociate themselves from any of that.
Hera stared, her brain racing. Cecilia had fixed that in a few hours, from an obscure planet with no real-time communications beyond its own system? Then, go back? Retrieve her command, her career? She felt her heart begin to hammer, the racing pulse pounding her body, making her hands shake. Exultation flooded her. She could see the look on her father's face, on her mother's. She could imagine how her younger brother, still in the academy, would react.
How?
I'd been afraid it would take weeks, but you remember Bunny said a crown minister was here hunting? Bunny asked me to speak to him about Mr. Smith, and of course I told him about you. I pointed out that going through the usual channels would require your complete explanation, and you, as an honest person, could hardly fail to mention Mr. Smith when you justified the killing of Admiral Lupescu.
Mr. Smith? A royal, you said when you were talking about the boot. Oh, not the one Ronnie was in trouble for.
Quite so. The minister saw my point, of course, and assured me that no statement from you would be required under the circumstances. Enough evidence of Lupescu's unfitness existed to overturn the judgment without recalling whatever court or board it was. You can trust him. With Mr. Smith's reputation at stake, he would do more than this. Luckily for us, the minister requires a special communications link. I don't know what you call it, but it's almost instantaneous through some kind of relay back to court. He was able to contact the necessary officials and...
And the surviving crew?
Harris felt already like a space fleet officer. The purple uniform forgotten, along with the past several hours.
Oh, yes. All rehabilitated, as they call it. I knew you would want that, so I insisted. Wherever they are, if some of them were not on that abominable island... I do understand, you know. We are both aristocrats, even if we aren't in the same aristocracy.
I thank you, m'lady.
I will hate losing you. Not only as a captain and student of equitation, but as a friend. I like you, and I don't like many people... Will it be difficult for you and Petrus?
Petrus? Oh.
So Cecilia had noticed. At once the exultation left her, as quickly as if someone had pulled a plug in her heart. She could go back, and he could go back, and they might serve on the same ship. But they could not go back to the past hours. Not ever. She tried to imagine him as a civilian, husband, but that would destroy him.
Oh, my. I didn't think...
Most people don't in your position. That's why I mentioned it before you go and tell the others. You can go back, but you don't have to.
Harris could hardly breathe for a moment in the alternation of possibility and impossibility. She could not give up her chance in the RSS again. She could not give up Petrus. She could not ask him to give up his career, as miraculously restored as her own. But if either of them...
Damn.
It was all she could say. She sat down suddenly, and Cecilia made a show of turning away, preparing something to drink, offering her a steaming cup of some brown liquid. She should know what it was, but she couldn't recognize anything.
As a classical maiden aunt, I am qualified to give useless advice, which you are free to ignore. You love that man, and he loves you. That was obvious when I first saw you two together. You can't be together in the service, and neither of you will be happy as a civilian partnering the one who stays in. If you do go back, Harris, be sure you're never on the same ship. You know that.
I know that.
Her lips felt numb. Was it the drink? Was she going to faint? She never fainted. It was ridiculous. But her skin remembered his touch. Her ears remembered his voice, the sound of his breathing, the beat of his heart when her head lay on his chest. She wanted that, wanted it more than anything. Except her commission, her ship, her crew, which she couldn't have if it meant him.
I still need a captain. I need new crew members. You told me that. If you choose not to re-enter the service, you would have a place with me.
And Petrus would become just a crew member on a rich old lady's yacht? She could not see him being happy with that. He had taken as much pride in his career as she in hers. He would not settle for less.
You ought to ask him. You didn't ask before, and look where that got you. Give him the chance now, while you have the chance. While you are, for the moment, free.
It was true. She had not thought she had a chance before. She had taken the commander's way, the solitary way, and had not asked anyone. And because of that, Lupescu had been able to ruin her and her crew. This time she could ask him. She stood up, nodding to Cecilia without saying a word. She could not have said a word, and went to find Petrus. He was staring out to sea, staring at the island on which he had been hunted.
Looks pretty from here.
Yes.
Harris.
Lady Cecilia has intervened with the service.
You're getting your commission back? Well, good. I hope you would. They ought to have that much sense.
They're reversing all the disciplinary actions. All the survivors will be reinstated with all records cleared. It would probably have happened anyway, but Lady Cecilia...
has connections. I'm glad she cares that much. You must have impressed her. Well, back into the harness for us, eh? And...
we don't have to go.
What? Of course you'll go. You're not meant to be a yacht captain.
She said I should give you the chance. The chance I didn't give you before.
What do you mean? Are you saying...
Petrus, there's a choice. If we go back, it would be best if we never served together. But if we don't go back...
You love it. Your family, the Serrano Admiralty.
My family have already endured the worst. A Serrano resigning under a cloud rather than face a court. They will abide my decision one way or the other. Or they will not. And I will abide their decision. I don't know what they'll do, but I don't fear it. Your family?
Mine? Farmers and small merchants on Vonnegut's world. I was the outlaw there, too. Ran off to join the military, like kids have always done. Wouldn't walk behind a plow or pull onions if I could see stars. And they wouldn't mind. They gave me up for lost when I told my Uncle Eth what I thought of farming. I couldn't go back and ask for land, that's for sure. But away, I can do what I want. I liked my work.
I know that. You can have it back, that's what Cecilia told me. She's got you all cleared.
Yes, but it can't be the same. Not just us, the whole thing. Some of them died through this. I can't forget that.
Harris felt cold. They had died because of her, because she had left. She already knew that. If he couldn't forget, he probably couldn't forgive either. And last night had been last night. But he was looking at her again, this time steadily, eye to eye.
But what did you offer as an alternative? You said if we don't go back...
we could both work for Lady Cecilia. On her yacht.
You must like her a lot, even to consider it. What do you do?
Lady Cecilia travels. From the existing records of past voyages, she travels widely. And from the events of the first weeks I worked for her, her yacht has harbored smugglers. Without her knowledge, of course.
You're sure of that?
Yes. She's stubborn, opinionated, and all the other things you expect from a rich old lady, but she's honest.
Like you. No wonder you get along so well. So, you'll continue?
It depends. Bad as Lupescu was, some will always mistrust my loyalty. Even my family would have reservations. And I would rather take an honest salary from her than a commission restored with her influence. So... it's either stay with her or look for something else, and I have no reason now to leave her. At least not until I've straightened out that crew.
I know that tone. All right, then. I think all of us will have the same problems. Those who don't think so are welcome to go back, but as for me, no. You think your Lady Cecilia will hire more than one of us? And will we have to bow as she sweeps by?
Are you saying yes?
No, I'm saying yes, ma'am. Since I believe that's the correct civilian usage. I gather the restriction on fraternization doesn't apply either.
No, not off the bridge. I've got to check in with Zirkin, the standing watch, and let her know there's a sealed weapons cargo coming up to the ship. It's a good thing we had a complete refitting at Tacoman Roads. Did you know the sulfur cycle was off by 2 sigs?
Dear heart, Harris, Captain, your owner had better pull up her bloomers or whatever they call them on aristocrats. Weapons? Does she know?
Of course she knows. I used her credit line.
That had been how long ago? And would Cecilia still authorize those weapons? Better get them aboard before she changed her mind. Somewhere, the smugglers that had put that contraband aboard had to be wondering what had happened to it. The rich were no safer if they didn't bother to defend themselves than someone on the docks. In the depths of her mind, the final door to her past shut, and she faced the future as a civilian without the old pain. It would return, she knew, as old pains always did, in the dark hours everyone faced. But the worst was over. Discretion must be served. Two by two, the former prey, Harris's former crew members, left for the mainland hospital, where, Harris was assured, Bunny's excellent medical staff would check them out, and where they would live in privacy and luxury until they decided what they wanted to do. She had spoken to each one, but they were too dazed to talk much. She understood. She felt that way herself. Too many emotions, too much turmoil. Finally, with the lodge empty, it was her turn. She and Cecilia and Petrus had a luxurious flitter, with Michaels himself at the controls for the flight back. No more clouds. The wrinkled ocean lay blank and blue under a clear sky until they reached the mainland. Harris stared at it until she felt the pattern was imprinted forever on her retinas. She wondered why Petrus was traveling with them, then wondered why she wondered. And why couldn't they talk? After that first night, she had not expected the awkwardness of the days and nights since, when they could cling together, but not a complete sentence. The flitter delivered them to the wide courtyard before the main house rather than the flitter hangars. Here it was cold, with low clouds racing across the sky before a sharp wind. Harris sealed the jacket she had not needed on the island and shivered. She was glad she wouldn't have to walk up the hill from the other end of the village. Inside, Petrus looked up the grand staircase that first time with an odd expression that mingled delight and apprehension.
This is exactly how I thought a great lord's house would look, and I don't trust it. It's too perfectly what it is, like an entertainment cube version of a fleet cruiser.
It's intimidating. I couldn't believe anyone actually lived in it, but they do.
Harris wondered where the servants were. Usually, two or three at least were in the hall at this hour. But the one who had opened the door had vanished, leaving it to Cecilia to lead the way upstairs. Petrus had the room next to hers, where she remembered someone else having been, but she did not raise her brows to Cecilia, who already looked entirely too smug. How had Cecilia known that?
Don't forget that Petrus will need to check in with Neil. I'll let him know you're coming, shall I?
Harris looked at Petrus. He had not had the benefit of Cecilia's riding simulator, but he grinned.
I can hardly wait to see Harris on horseback, chasing a fox. Although I'm not looking forward to those early starts.
Nonetheless, and of course, I don't have to warn either of you about discussing all this.
Not at all.
Petrus raised and lowered his brows at her, a clear dismissal.
Dinner at 8.
Cecilia strode off down the corridor.
Your employer...
Our employer. Unless you change your mind.
I never change my mind. Come in here.
He led her into his room, a twin of her own.
I don't believe this either.
He was staring at the furniture, the gleaming expanse of the bathroom and its glittering toys. He walked around the room, opening and closing the doors of wardrobes, looking into drawers in tall, polished chests. Harris could see the racks of clothes and wondered.
I'm sure these all fit. Lady Cecilia would have seen to it. I always knew there was a good reason to leave the Onion Farm.
He looked into the bathroom again.
Oh, plenty of room, warm towels. Shall I scrub your back, my love, or will you scrub mine?
Ronnie was sure they were all making too much fuss about his condition. George had been shot. George might die. He still had that nagging headache and a collection of bruises and scrapes, but after a night in the hospital, he was ready to go back to hunting. Or at least, back to living in the far more comfortable quarters he had enjoyed before.
Time enough. You're not leaving until the doctor agrees, and your scans aren't normal yet.
It wasn't the same nurse as before, he thought, and wondered how often their shifts changed.
Nothing's broken. You let that fellow in the other bed leave just 24 hours after a broken leg.
Bones aren't brains.
Ronnie closed his eyes, feigning sleep, and was surprised to find dark outside his windows when he opened them again. The next morning, which morning, he woke without a trace of the headache and the awareness that he had not been clear-headed before.
You're not all there yet. Well, you think you are, but it's like climbing out of a hole. It's lighter where you are, but you're still in shadow. I know this will disappoint you, but I've already notified Lord Thornbuckle's head groom. You are not to ride for at least 10 days, and you'll have to be reevaluated then.
But I didn't...
The doctor smiled and patted his knee as if he were a child. Considering her white hair and wrinkles, she probably thought of him that way.
What about George?
They had told him nothing so far except soothing murmurs. He braced himself to hear that George had died.
Do I understand that everyone calls him the odious George?
Yes.
I can see why. He can have visitors. In fact, he has visitors all day now. So if you want to know, just take the lift up one, and it's the third door on the left. He's still on the surgical floor, though really, he shouldn't be.
She shook her head without finishing that and left. Ronnie pulled on his clothes, hardly wondering where they'd come from, and went to see George. George lay propped up in bed, looking like an advertisement for a hospital company. Dark hair perfectly in place, fading bruises on his face, suggesting courage without diminishing his good looks. Ronnie knew that on anyone else, the yellow and green and dull purple would have looked hideous, but George's luck seemed to hold.
Ronnie, I wondered when you'd make it up here. You missed all the excitement.
Ronnie stared at him.
Missed all the excitement? Hasn't anyone told George about the Admiral and the gas grenade or the Prince or...
My father's on the way.
George looked exactly as he had always looked, smug, odious. Ronnie wanted to hit him, but you couldn't hit someone in bed with a gunshot wound. He went in, nonetheless, holding a vague grudge, but not sure how to let it go. Should he tell George about the Prince? He thought he remembered it was supposed to be a secret. George's face changed.
I was really scared. You passed out on me. Then they caught me, and those two...
Who?
The guards back on Bandon. I never saw the hunters at all, just these two men.
They're the ones who shot you?
Oh, no. One of Bunny's militia shot me. And it wasn't an accident, either. I tried to tell Captain Serrano, but he couldn't get it across. He was standing there, eyeing your aunt as if he'd like to kill her right then.
Did you tell Bunny when you got back here?
Ronnie had an urge to leap up himself right then and go find his aunt.
It's all right. That's part of what you missed. That's the same man who tried to kill your aunt and Captain Serrano when they went to find you in the cave.
Oh.
Ronnie tried to remember if he'd heard about that man before. He remembered some things vividly. Finding George unconscious, trying to build a litter. The storm, Rafa's warmth against him in the cold, dark cave. That moment of sheer terror when he jumped for the gas grenade. But he had no clear mental map of the time. How long they'd been on the island, or whether they'd stayed on Bandon overnight or flown straight back.
Your aunt plugged him. He had the captain covered.
She would.
Ronnie hated not remembering. It was like being very old, he thought. He He had probably said things and done things without really knowing it. What if he had said something stupid? What if he had said something stupid to Rafa? Was that why he couldn't remember seeing her in the hospital?
It's not that easy, being a hero. At least, it wasn't for me. You...
Not for me either. There's a lot I can't remember.
There's a lot I wish I couldn't remember. I have never been so scared, so humiliated in my life. Not even that first term at school. At least you didn't have to scrub any toilets.
Not that again.
Ronnie turned to look. She might never have been off the mainland. She looked like all the other polished young women who had come for the hunting party, and she looked like no one else in the universe. Bubbles, beside her, leaned against the door and grinned broadly.
Now I can quit holding Rafa's hand every night. You had us all scared, Ronnie.
Me? George is the one who got shot.
All George needed was a good surgeon, a day in the regen tank, and a personality transplant. My father could supply the first two, but not the last.
You'll regret that, Bubbles. My reputation depends on being odious and wrinkle-free.
Your reputation depends on your father, or someone would have beaten the odiousness out of you long ago.
Unfair. Well, partly unfair. And I do resent the damage to my good trousers.
I assure you that you'll be wrinkle-free and out of here in time for the hunt ball, if you promise to keep your mouth shut and cause no trouble about Mr. Smith.
George made an innocent face that would not have fooled anyone. It certainly did not fool Ronnie or the girls.
If you don't promise and keep that promise, I'll make sure that someone slips the wrong stuff in the regen tank for your next treatment, and you'll have wrinkles in places you don't think wrinkles can form. Permanent wrinkles. Then you can stay in this room until you die of genuine old age.
Rafa came over to take Ronnie's hand.
And I will personally ruin every garment you own and send your tailor a certified letter giving your new measurements. Interesting new measurements.
Rafa mimed the anguish of someone in trousers with a short rise, the problems of skimpy sleeves and a baggy short jacket. George rolled his eyes dramatically.
You might have trusted me. Lawyers' sons learn some discretion. All right, I promise. No leading questions, no suggestive remarks, nothing about Mr. Smith or his other identity. But how am I supposed to explain my disappearance from the noble sport of fox hunting?
We took the flitter to go picnicking and we crashed. And you and Ronnie were hurt saving us. Very simple. Very...
What about Lady Cecilia and Captain Serrano?
Unrelated, except that Lady Cecilia is the one who let Bunny know we were missing, just as it happened. We're hoping to get past the hunt ball without the whole story coming out.
Neil had pronounced Petrus's seat untidy but effective, and passed him into the blue hunt at once. Harris had little interest in riding to hounds anymore, but also little choice. If she stayed home, it would be noticed, and tongues were already wagging. Cecilia, pleading age, could go out only twice a week. Harris had to ride 5 days out of seven. She knew Cecilia was up to something again, or still, because the Crown Minister stayed in the same days as Cecilia.
I might just as well go back to the ship.
That afternoon, her horse had stumbled on landing from a wall, fallen heavily, and come up lame. Harris herself had bruised her shoulder. The fox, if there was a fox, had got clean away. She wanted to be back on a decent ship, where large, heavy animals didn't dump her off and then roll on her. Her leg wasn't broken, but it felt reshaped.
You should go by the hospital and spend a few hours in the tank. You've had a hard fall and you're sore. It'll heal.
We'll have crew changes.
You can't go until after the hunt dinner and ball. We have to finish out this much of the season or it will be suspicious. You notice that no one comments on what happened?
But
Mr. Smith is safely contained. I've offered to take him home since we already officially know. We'll stay until the hunt dinner and leave the next day. I always stay for the first hunt dinner.
Harris found this confusing, since in the books she'd read, there was only one official hunt dinner per hunt club. But presumably, Bunny did things his own way. And with such a long season, perhaps most people didn't stay for the whole thing. Cecilia patted her shoulder. Harris tried not to wince.
Now go spend a few hours in the tank and ask Sari to give you a good rub down. Petrus will be in the green hunt, Neil says, by day after tomorrow, and you'll feel much better by then.
Harris didn't want a rub down from Sari. She wanted a pleasant night with Petrus. But with her bruises, it wouldn't be pleasant. At least she could use the trip to the hospital to check on everyone.
Oh, when is this hunt dinner?
End of next week.
Cecilia took a few twirling steps that startled Harris.
I may be old and plain, but there's no law that says I can't dance.
Harris thought of dancing with Petrus and felt her bones begin to melt. She would manage not to hunt in the next week. She didn't want to risk missing that. It might even be worth the hours in the regen tank. She was in the tank, trying to relax as the technicians fussed over her bruised arm and leg, when one of the things Cecilia had said brought her bolt upright, splashing. She looked at the technician, whose expression contained all the words he had managed not to say.
Sorry. Bad memory.
Cecilia had said they were going to transport the prince home. That meant... She squeezed her eyes shut and thought about it. Would Ronnie stay here? Surely she wouldn't have that pair on her ship at the same time. The last week passed in a flurry. Cold blue days, icy nights, glorious rides across the open land the green hunt favored. Harris had come out of the tank with more than her bruises healed, and suspected Cecilia of telling someone to load her IV with mood elevators. Either that, or the old books were right when they described the glow of lovers riding stirrup to stirrup at a gallop. They could talk again, she had discovered.
And what are you wearing to the ball tomorrow?
A dress.
Harris could feel herself starting to chuckle in anticipation, a quiver that Petrus must surely recognize. He tapped her nose with his finger.
A dress? Amazing. I thought fox hunters wore skins and furs to a ball. Or horse hides, or something equally barbaric. What are you laughing about? Are you wearing a fur dress?
No, but I won't tell you. You'll have to see it.
An extravagance, which she had not intended, but it had made an excuse to miss one day's hunt. It made a sizable hole in the salary Cecilia had yet to pay her. She could hardly wait to see Petrus's face when he saw her in it. Harris had not meant to wait until the day of the hunt dinner to tackle Cecilia about the changes needed in the ship, but there never seemed to be time. But she had made promises to Petrus and the others. She had to make sure Cecilia understood before they actually boarded. The argument, she was sure it would be an argument, must be private. She slithered into her own gown and shook her head at the image in the mirror. The beaded bodice shifted color with every movement, shimmering. The soft pleats of the midnight blue skirt were spangled with random beads, as if the bodice had dripped fire onto it. And she looked very unmilitary, she decided. Very unmilitary. She found Cecilia almost dressed, and fiddling with the amber necklace she favored. A flounce of ivory lace refused to lie properly beneath it.
I need to talk to you about the ship.
What's wrong?
Nothing's wrong.
So what is it now?
Some changes will have to be made.
Harris eyed Cecilia. The older woman had looked tired for the last week and claimed it had nothing to do with the ship. The minister? Mr. Smith? The service?
Such as? Oh. I suppose we'll have to have another environmental system to take care of the extra people.
Not really. You have four crew who have asked for separation. Three want to stay here and have applied for employment with Lord Thornbuckle's personnel. The other wants to leave at the next major roads. Then there's a member of your house staff who got pregnant in Hospitality Bay. Bates says he is sure of intent in this case because she had pursued even him. And one of your undergardeners. So... You see, we won't be overloaded.
What changes, then?
Weapons.
Cecilia stared, her mouth opening.
You are a very wealthy woman in a very luxurious and capable ship. Remember that you've already been used by smugglers. What if they want their cargo? What if they want the whole ship? What if they want you? The places you like to travel are not exactly the safest corners of the universe. We need proper armament.
Now that you have gunners, you have to have guns.
So Cecilia had understood, or found someone to translate, the military specialty codes her new crew members carried. Harris cocked her head. Cecilia could hardly claim to be a philosophical pacifist, not after having shot someone herself.
What's the matter, m'lady? Do you think I'll deliberately lead you into danger?
Of course she had done just that, but it was for a good reason. Cecilia moved restlessly, her long fingers tangled together.
No, I don't know. Things have changed. Before, I knew what I was doing. Yes, I was just cruising around having fun, but I knew that was it. Now, when I think of leaving here and going off to Roledra for the qualifying trials, or on to Cabrice for the finals, it's not that interesting.
Harris smothered a grin. Better than she'd hoped for.
If it's bothering you, m'lady, I'm sure we can find something to do with this ship.
Something? You mean you still consider me an idle old lady?
You said it, I didn't. But think, you are healthy and tough, and yet you had smugglers using your ship. Don't you have friends equally old and wealthy?
Not really.
Who might have worse parasites aboard than even your Captain Olin? There are other things to hunt besides foxes, and other mounts besides horses.
Which prey is beneath the notice of the regular fleet?
Or too elusive for the less agile. Consider...
How many guns, Harris? What size? And do I get to mention cost?
No more than we need, no bigger than we need, and I will respect your resources only less than your life.
As you did at Tacoman Rhodes. No, don't defend yourself. I knew what you were doing and agreed. But from now on, I want to be a member of the hunt staff, not just the owner who pays the fees. You'll have to keep teaching me about my ship, and let me be part of your plans.
You have earned that, and more.
Then let us go down and dazzle the hunt dinner, and dance the night away. And as for the future, a-hunting we shall go.
And she grabbed Harris's arm and led her down the corridor to the main staircase, where Petrus, correct in formal dinner attire, waited below. Harris saw his expression shift from surprise through amusement to admiration as she and Cecilia came down arm in arm. He offered an arm to each and cocked an eyebrow at Harris.
You settled it, I gather?
She was never a military officer, Petrus. Look at her.
But the tumult of the others interrupted whatever Harris might have said. Already the tall rooms rang with many voices, and more men and women in their formal best came down the stairs. Bunny, looking as foolish tonight as he had at first, chatted with one group after another. Then he caught sight of Cecilia and came over with obvious haste.
So glad you could stay for the ball. We might have a slight inconvenience.
Oh?
Mr. Smith. He's eluded the minister's manservant again.
Harris stared. She hadn't realized Mr. Smith had been loose before. Bunny's mouth smiled, as if they discussed the day's run, but his eyes were cold and angry.
Declared he wasn't going to be sent home like a naughty schoolboy in an old lady's yacht with a battle axe for a captain. As you know, the minister had refused to let me place him under a proper guard, but as the minister does not know, I put a tracer tag on him. He dashed off into the woods, silly twit. Captain Siggin will bring him in, but I'd like to sedate him and send him up in a shuttle right away, if you don't mind. I can isolate him in the station sick bay.
You have every right to lock him in your local jail, on bread and water, stupid boy.
Since there's a standing watch aboard, m'lady, we can have him aboard your yacht straight from the shuttle. Fewer eyes to see, fewer mouths to talk.
Fine, do it.
Cecilia looked angrier than before. Harris couldn't understand why. Then she changed expression to astonishment and relief. Harris looked over and saw Ronnie, George, Bubbles, and Rafa. With them was a heavier man whose resemblance to George lay more in manner than in feature. Bunny turned and waved them over.
Good to see you up and about. And you, of course, Sir Mahoney.
I have no quarrel with you, Bunny. Don't go formal on me. I'll have to start wondering if I should.
All right, Kettle. Just so you know, I took this very seriously indeed.
I can see George, and I know what happened. That tells me you took it seriously. Your lovely daughter was in it too, I understand.
He patted Bubbles on the shoulder. Harris was surprised at the expression on the girl's face. She had changed, Harris thought, in some way that none of them yet knew. Perhaps not even the girl herself.
And, of course, Ceci's nephew. Those two have never been in trouble alone, or out of it together.
Kevil Mahoney had a trained voice that could carry conflicting messages with ease. Harris watched both George and Ronnie flush, then subside without saying a word. He leaned closer to Bunny.
And Mr. Smith? How is that estimable young man?
He will go home shortly. Transportation has already been arranged.
Ah. Well, to be honest, Mr. Smith's travel arrangements do not concern me, at least not this evening. I'm simply delighted to be here for the festive occasion, with both lads out of the hospital and able to enjoy it.
Kevil Mahoney smiled, bowed slightly, and walked off, leaving the young people behind.
I promised, but did my father?
Enough. It's almost time for dinner, and I will not have it ruined by speculation. Captain Serrano, if I might have the honor of your company.
Harris had not expected this. She glanced at Cecilia, who, after all, ranked her in every conceivable way these people calculated rank. But Cecilia now looked more relaxed, and simply smiled and nodded. Petrus, after one startled look, offered his arm to Cecilia, who accepted it with another smile. Harris took Bunny's arm and hoped she did not look as confused as she felt. He led her through the crowd, and she could hear the subdued murmurs that must be comments on this unusual occurrence. Harris jumped.
I didn't mean to alarm you, Captain, but this is traditional.
His wife was standing with Buttons. As they made their way into the dining room, she realized that the participants in the recent adventures had been provided with partners that justified their being seated at the head table. Bunny's wife with Buttons, and George with Bubbles, and Ronnie with an elderly lady, and Rafa with an elderly man of the same vintage.
That's my Aunt Trima and my wife's uncle. They're both quite deaf, and they've refused implants. They love coming to a couple of hunt dinners a year. They sit together at the ball afterwards and write each other saucy notes on their compads. Eccentric, but harmless.
Petrus, with Lady Cecilia, certainly had a place at the family table. George's father sat at the far end, with another elderly relation on one side and one of the gawky cousins on the other.
You see the advantages of a reputation for eccentricity and archaicism?
Indeed, yes.
Harris looked down the long dining hall to the trumpeters in their beribboned tunics who were ready to lead in the feast. Most of the guests had found their places, but Bunny waited until even the clumsy soul who overturned his chair had safely reseated himself. Then he nodded at the trumpeters, who lifted their instruments once more. The feast came in. Cecilia reached around Petrus.
It's about as authentic as the foxes, but it's fun.
Bunny winked at her, and Harris began to relax. It could be worse. Would have been worse if Cecilia hadn't told her, if they hadn't told Bunny, if she and Cecilia both had not been good shots. They could all have been dead. She pulled her mind away from that with an effort and made herself enjoy the spectacle. Serving trays loaded with exotic foods whose origin she couldn't even guess, servants in colorful livery, and the music. The food, when she tasted it, drove the last grim thought from her mind.
I haven't had a chance to thank you. It's been hectic since you got back.
I didn't realize Mr. Smith had been giving trouble.
Although that's not the reason I asked you to come in with me. It may prove convenient to have you here when he's found. If you're sure the transfer to Lady Cecilia's yacht poses no problem.
Not if I have a direct line up.
Of course. My debt to you continues to grow. I don't know if you actually enjoyed the sport, but please consider yourself welcome here any time.
Under the calm expression, Harris sensed tension and even savagery. They ate in silence for some minutes, as the fish course came and went, and slices of roast appeared.
Bubbles says she wants to talk to you.
To me?
An experience like that would change anyone, I understand. But she's been the youngest, the wildest. So, of course, her change had to be greater.
Did she tell you about it?
Some. Not all. She thinks you, because you were military, will understand her better.
Harris could think of nothing socially acceptable to say. She could imagine the sort of thing Bubbles would think she could understand, and she did understand, but not in the way Bubbles would want. Nor did she wish to interfere in this family, especially not now.
She's almost certainly wrong about that. But of course I'll listen to her.
He went on cutting a slice of roast into matching slivers.
I must admit that before I knew you better, you would not have been my choice of confidant for my daughter.
The military woman?
Not exactly. The Serrano Admiralty is well known.
His gaze slid sideways to meet hers. Harris was surprised, and probably looked it.
My family? They think I'm the disgrace. Why should you object to them?
I prefer you.
Bunny pushed the slivers of meat aside. He picked up a silvery button from beside his plate and clipped it to his ear. Moments later, his jaw bunched. Harris tried not to stare and made inroads on her dinner. Beside her, Petrus was chatting with Cecilia, almost pointedly ignoring her. Cecilia winked past him. So she had explained, or so Harris hoped. Bunny touched her wrist lightly, and she turned back to him.
We may have a problem. Mr. Smith divested himself of the tagger. Captain Siggin found it, but not the Mr. Smith. He's already sealed the flitter hangers and other sources of transport, but Mr. Smith is a skilled rider.
We are not going out looking for that idiot on horseback in the dark.
No, you're right, we aren't. The militia are. And if he found us that mare he stole, I will have his hide on my wall. I don't know how a registered embryo could end up this stupid.
He'll come here. He wants in on the fun, that's all. There's a party he wants to play. He's like Ronnie was before. He'll think of a disguise or something from...
Before anyone could get up to investigate, someone outside flung the doors open. There stood a masked man in a costume more bizarre than any in the room. Puffed breeches under a loud tartan kilt, white hose, buckled shoes, a doublet, a wide-sleeved shirt, a short cape, and a curious pile of velvet and feathers on his head. It looked as if he had ransacked a costume shop. He held the reins of a skittish horse and brandished a sword. Bunny sat rigid. From the far end of the table, the elderly lady Ronnie had partnered stood up abruptly, glaring at Bunny.
Now this is ridiculous. Disgraceful mixing of periods. Imagine wearing a kilt over breeches. If this is your surprise, young Brathcombe, it is singularly unamusing.
For once, Bunny had nothing to say. Harris stared at the masked man with instant certainty. No one else on the planet would do something like this. Were those mustaches sticking out from behind the mask? And what should she do? She caught a glimpse of a servant behind the horse trying to edge nearer, but the frightened animal plunged and kicked, and the servant retreated.
It is traditional, I believe, to have a masked stranger make away with a beautiful woman at affairs like this.
Harris looked around the room. The Crown Minister had turned white, but most people were amused, interested. The servant Harris had first seen came in sight again. The masked man turned and handed him the reins.
Here, hold my mount.
Wide-eyed, the servant did so. Then the masked man strode into the dining hall, up the length to the family's table, grabbed Raffaella firmly by one wrist, and bowed to Ronnie.
You stole a singer from me. I but returned the compliment.
Imposter!
Ronnie leapt to his feet and yanked the mask from the man's face and the sword from his hand. Mr. Smith, without a doubt. But Ronnie's furious stare down the table denied it.
You would have us think you're the prince, because everyone knows I quarreled with the prince, but you're only a common mechanic.
Let go of my arm.
Mr. Smith complied, looking confused.
You're a mole.
Raffaella rubbed her wrist and looked away, pointedly ignoring the intruder. Harris suddenly realized where Ronnie was going with this, and could hardly believe he had thought so fast. She waited for the cue she was sure he would give.
Don't think I didn't see you ogling Rafa on my aunt's yacht. Just because you know how to use makeup, you thought you could pass yourself off as the prince. Look at you! You're in a room full of people who know the prince. Didn't you think of that? Did you really expect to fool people by covering your face? Did you hear what Lord Thornbuckle's aunt said? We know how to dress in period costumes. This mess you have on is a travesty. Pitiful.
Ronnie looked down the table at Harris.
I must complain, Captain Serrano, about the actions of your crewmen.
Harris stood smoothly.
You're quite right. I regret that I didn't recognize him in his disguise. But he is the only junior environmental tech, and I've never seen him in anything but a ship suit. I take full responsibility. Petrus.
Petrus stood as well.
We'll make sure this individual doesn't intrude again. And I dare say his working papers will be canceled permanently.
But I am! And this was all I could find!
Silence! I insist that my militia escort this individual to the shuttle port and all the way into the custody of your yacht, Lady Cecilia. I believe I am correct in saying there may be charges beyond my jurisdiction involving impersonation of a member of the royal family.
He inclined his head to Cavill Mahoney, who nodded.
Then I would not have him on this planet 1 hour longer than necessary. Captain Serrano, if you will inform your standing watch.
With pleasure.
Mr. Smith found himself overpowered and dragged away by militia, while Harris called the yacht and arranged for his confinement. Ronnie still stood at the end of the table, and he looked to Bunny for permission to speak. Bunny nodded. Ronnie rubbed his nose a moment until he had everyone's attention.
Most of you know that I was exiled for a year after the prince and I had had a dispute. Some of you know more. But what you may not know is how I could be so sure the prince had not come here in some disguise or other. When I knew where my aunt was bringing me, I worried about that myself and looked it up. The prince was posted to the Royal Aerospace Service Depot on Navern.
Ronnie was looking at the Crown Minister, who, Harris noted, suddenly looked very alert.
I'm sure any of you can check that posting and confirm it. And this man, I don't even know his name, caught my eye on the yacht because he did somewhat resemble the prince, and he was sneaking around Raffaella.
But are you sure it wasn't the prince pretending to be an environmental tech?
Of course it wasn't. We had both sworn an oath to duel if we saw each other within the next year. Do you think both of us would be coward enough to ignore that? That person didn't even know how to use a sword.
He looked angry. Rafa patted his hand, and he sat down again. Harris could almost hear the collective lurch with which everyone tried to return to the mood of a hunt dinner and ball and ignore the interruption, as Bunny signaled and the servants brought in another course. George leaned against the mirrored wall of the ballroom, feeling sulky again. Ronnie and Rafa hardly seemed to notice the music, but flowed with it like leaves on a stream. Captain Serrano and Petrus... he would like to have made a jest of them, but could not. They had gone through so much. They deserved their obvious happiness. If only Bubbles had not turned against him. They could have made another good match, he was sure. He liked her well enough, now that Rafa had turned to Ronnie. Blondes set off his own dark handsomeness. It was unfair. He and the prince alone, out of all that crowd, could not enjoy the party. And while he was luckier than the prince, in being here and not under guard somewhere, he had no one to share his evening with. He watched the whirling dancers idly for a while, then stared. His father. His father and Ronnie's aunt. Talking, laughing, obviously enjoying each other. They danced by, and Lady Cecilia winked at him. His father and that old... although she wasn't all that bad, really. She danced remarkably well, in fact. He just didn't want her as a stepmother, or aunt, or whatever she and his father might have in mind. The two of them together were definitely too smart for him. He and Ronnie would never enjoy more pranks. He turned away, ready to take a long walk somewhere, and almost fell over the girl coming his way. Her eyes widened.
You're George Starbridge Mahoney, aren't you? Kevil Mahoney's son.
George knew what to do with that kind of look and drew himself up.
Yes, I am.
She had hazel eyes and fluffy hair of a red-brown shade he couldn't have put a name to. Something about her made him feel protective. Something more than the slender wrists and hands, he was sure, or the somewhat pointy face.
Oh, you don't know me. I'm just one of the cousins. You've seen me out hunting, but usually covered with mud.
I should have seen beneath it.
He said it gallantly. He liked being gallant.
Would you care to dance?
He led her onto the floor.
Oh, I love balls.
They whirled around. She danced as lightly as a fox over a fence on its way to take a chicken from the coop. George drew back a moment, wondering. Was he the hunter, or was she?
It doesn't matter. She can't be that certain herself.
He took her past his father and Ronnie's aunt, enjoying their reaction.
So do I. So do I.
The Serrano Legacy, Hunting Party, is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2002, Elizabeth Moon. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2008, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, Sonny Lasky, Andy Clements, David Coyne, Tess Rowan, Terrence Aselford, James Konacek, James Lewis, Michael John Casey, M.B. Van Dorn, Dylan Lynch, Thomas Penny, Ken Jackson, Richard Rowan, and Mort Shelby. Directed by Nanette Savard. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Chris Rowan, Nathaniel Perry, and Temeskin Wubna. Graphic audio sound design by Chris Rowan. Additional original music by Chris Rowan and Dan Smith. If you enjoyed Serrano Legacy, be sure to look for the Deathstalker series, available at Rookstops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.